folks. As I may have mentioned before, it's always evening here at The Watcher. I'm Connor, and this is Fenn.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, that's your job. I don't even have to think about what's happening, because you're going to tell me.
that is an on-the-spot statement. Actually, I've been thinking about the Cohen hearing yesterday. It was a pretty big piece of history. I kind of thought we'd be bereft if we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I haven't been well, and I was in a ferocious mood yesterday. So I didn't even it was yesterday, wasn't it? This is how I've been very unwell. Sorry. But I didn't even watch it. And I had this like grumpy feeling of like a famous liar is talking about another famous liar. And I just don't know if there's a grain of truth to be found in it. But I'm sure there are. And hopefully that's something that we're going to talk about this evening.
Well, you know, it's funny. That's not without precedent, a famous liar talking about a famous liar. I mean, I don't know the exact date, but I caught a blurb about it watching something yesterday. Famously back, I think, maybe in the 60s, a gangster testified before Congress to take down a crime family.
Yeah, I mean, that's its pure distilled form, isn't it?
It was overall, I do have to say, my general assessment was, yeah, it was. And, you know, I mean, we all knew. I mean, I knew, of course. I mean, you know, I've known that guy was a mobster since the 80s. I mean, he talked like one, you know. But, yeah, that's really what the whole gist of what the environment of the Trump Organization that was given by Michael Cohen yesterday was, that it operates like a crime family. Yeah. But that's not really a surprise. I mean, you know, everybody knew that. He talks like a gangster with the rat remarks and all that. But that's all common stuff. I mean, I wanted to talk about the politics of it.
Okay.
Yeah, like because I watched it and This is an odd thing. For the first time in my life, I think, Connor, I'm going to read the, I guess, hopefully it's an overview of the general rules of the House floor.
Okay.
Because as I was watching the committee hearing, it's not the first committee hearing I've watched yesterday. I picked out little things that they did, you know, and stuck them in the back of my old dude's head so that I could remember, you know, exactly what the politics of it was. And then I tried to this morning. I had, some medical appointments to go to, but I tried to this morning pick up on what lawmakers were saying to the morning shows generally, you know, what the messaging game was. Do you know what I mean by that? That cycle?
Yeah, but actually, go on. Go into a bit more detail, please.
Well, you can pick out the politics of what a party is going to do by the messaging that they engage in after an event has happened.
Can you give me an example, even if it's hypothetical?
No, I can give. Well, yes, I can give you an example. I can give you an example that's not hypothetical. And we may get into it in detail or not. But, well, actually, I'll just use one of the points. The Republicans didn't really have anything yesterday. They didn't defend Trump. Basically, all they did was attack Michael Cohen and a few times say that he was trying to monetize things. Well, I mean, we'll get into that in just a bit. But this morning, Jim Jordan.
Yeah, seriously.
It makes me queasy saying his name. Was talking about the checks that Michael Cohen had brought as evidence. We'll have to get into that if you don't really even know. I have to give you a real broad overview before we get into
that. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, Michael Cohen brought some evidence, and Jim Jordan was trying to pass it off as something that was part of not an illegal activity.
Okay.
So there's a weak sauce narrative coming, but that would be an example of it, because he was on TV this morning talking to, I think, Fox News about it. Which,
okay,
it's starting to be, that's going to be the only place you can sell those crazy ideas now.
Yeah.
So, since we've established that you don't really have like a broad overview of what happened, you want me to do that real fast?
You know what? I would like that. And also, I feel even if I had seen it, I would still want that because it's like the second set of eyes thing anyway. Like even for folks that are listening that watched it, I think it's really nice to hear a rundown from someone else.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, well, before I say anything, I'll have to say that you're absolutely right. He's a known liar. He's pled guilty to lying to the very body that he was standing in front of, albeit different people, but still to the same institution that he was standing in front of. He pled guilty to lying to the house, you know? So, yeah, he's a liar, for sure. Yesterday, he brought checks to establish that Donald J. Trump and Donald J. Trump Jr. and the accountant whose name escapes me at this second had all signed checks to him to reimburse him for the Stormy. It was either the Stormy Daniels or it was the Stormy Daniels because the other woman, she that was something with the Inquirer. Why am I talking about these things about a president anyway? Yeah, so they were reimbursement checks for the payment that Cohen made, which as a kind of a sidebar, Cohen took out a mortgage, a home loan, to pay that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's fraud, I believe. I'm not a lawyer or anything, but that sounds like fraud.
Yeah, I mean, I've filled out a couple of forms in my time, and a lot of the time they say stuff about, hey, tell the truth on this form because you can get into trouble.
Well, interestingly, he also brought allegations of all kinds of criminal fraud, financial criminal fraud that has like, you know, those that's a 10-year statute of limitations on financial fraud crimes.
Really?
Yeah, it's not like a 5-year thing, you know. So that's a bigger deal. And some of the things he talked about were within that time. He had mentioned something about asset inflation to obtain money to buy the Buffalo Bills.
Okay.
Yeah, just really all kinds of little things, you know. But they weren't little things. They were real allegations of insurance fraud and tax fraud, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like real big. Big deal ones, and I wanted to get into the tax fraud a little bit later because it really relates to the last show that we talked about, the last show that we had when we talked about built into the system.
Yeah,
and I did like a little. Just I got to thinking about it, you know, like after I was watching it last night, I got to thinking about if X amount of dollars were saved, and I did some math in my head, and it really, really felt like something I wanted to share with people.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Okay, but that we're going to do that a little bit. So generally speaking, he came, he brought some receipts. He also did not back certain, I would say, more salacious allegations like secret love child or hitting his wife in the elevator. Trump hitting his wife in the elevator. There's rumors that there's a tape of that exists. I think maybe those some allegations that he disputed were allegations that were contained in the sealed dossier.
Okay.
That's not unsurprising, given that the sealed dossier was raw intelligence. And you know what the difference between raw intelligence and product intelligence is. I don't know what the name of that is. But do you know why it matters that it's raw intelligence?
That means that it hasn't been fully investigated. It hasn't been fully vetted on each, like it hasn't been checked on each point. Is that right?
That's absolutely what that means. So it's entirely possible that the Steele dossier contains, you know, 90% lies. It's entirely possible. Okay, so that is generally what happened. In my personal opinion, he looked as though a man who really 50% wanted to stick it to his boss and 50% was just tired of the crap and was just resigned to just let it all out, you know?
I mean, both of those things are beneficial to the general public.
I would agree with that. He did say something towards the end that I would like to address just because I feel it. He said that one of the reasons he was doing it is because he feared that there may not be a peaceful transfer of power if Trump were to lose in 2020.
Okay.
And I really don't think that I'm not on that boat, man.
That's good to hear.
There's talk about that stuff out there, but I have to, we could go into that into another episode sometime. And I'd like to, actually, because there's been talk of violence in the street, fear of violence in the streets, I guess, would be the best way of putting it. And I'm not on board with that. I think that that was an irresponsible statement to make.
Okay.
A conspiratorial mind might think the Russians slipped that in there. But, QAnon, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. No, I'm not that kind of guy. I personally believe that humans are a little too chaotic to engage in large-scale conspiracies.
Yeah, so, I'm close to that. I think that people fuck up usually. People are not competent enough. Maybe yours is a kinder view. People are too chaotic. I just think that people aren't smart enough, really. Because if you put 50 people together, one of those people or more will be stupid.
I'm going to say that those concepts are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Chaos and stupidity, actually, often linked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got the general narrative of what Cohen did, right? I use that word narrative on purpose because in politics, a lot of what you want to do is create a narrative.
Uh-huh.
Because what you're trying to do is keep the public on your side.
Uh-huh.
That's why it was so important when Trump stupidly said in the Oval Office, "I'll shut this thing down and gladly own it because you guys are idiots," or whatever he said. The narrative was created right then, politically speaking.
Yeah.
When Jim Jordan came on television this morning and started, trying to explain away $30,000 checks that were written during the presidency that Cohen alleged were in reimbursement for the payments to Stormy Daniels, he was trying to, change the narrative.
Right.
So the question I ask myself is, what was the narrative that was trying to be created in the hearing? Because it's not just a fact-finding mission. A hearing like that is meticulously planned out even in the order of the questioners.
Okay.
It's not just everybody shows up one day.
And we'll see what we find out.
Right, right.
Okay.
They make sure they don't ask the same questions unless they want to. Two Congress people might agree behind closed door or before the hearing, rather. Maybe not behind closed doors, but before the hearing that they're going to ask the same line of questioning.
Okay.
One might pick up on another one's later, Ocasio. I don't know how to say her name. I read it and I just kind of go through it. Yeah. AOC. Can we go with that? Is that okay?
Yes.
I'm lazy when it comes to names and they're complex. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. Probably should be reading Dune. But anyway.
Yeah.
So she did that brilliantly. She picked up on a previous line of questioning. And was able to get Michael Cohen to admit to allegations, I think, of insurance fraud as well. No, it was asset inflation for bank fraud, basically.
Wow.
And, Cohen alleged that there was just a pattern of it, that was business as usual, which is not surprising.
No.
To me, at least, but, I wanted to save that till the end. So. What was the narrative? I think that the Dems, in a hearing like that, it felt to me more like a trial as far as how they were trying to set the narrative. The Dems put Trump on trial and the Republicans put Cohen on trial.
Okay.
I'll talk about the Dems in a second, but the Republicans, didn't really dispute anything that Michael Cohen said about Donald Trump and the Trump organization or the checks or anything. They just kept calling him a liar.
Right.
Now, given that there are plenty of attorneys in Congress, especially on the Republican side, it felt to me like they were trying to put him on trial.
Mm-hmm.
so that if they could discredit him, that anything that he said wouldn't matter.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing. There was probably, maybe 2 hours into it. I was live tweeting and it was a lot harder than I thought it would be. But I think it was about 2 hours into it. He said something along the lines of, I used to do exactly this for Donald Trump and now you are, and look where it ended up. Look where I ended up.
Whoa, that's awesome. What a movie moment.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. Like, I was like, oh, you know, like, I felt like it was a goal in a soccer game or something, you know?
Yeah. And we've seen him do it. That's one of the key things that we think of when we think of Michael Cohen, is him doing that kind of stuff.
Right, right. And it was just a brilliant moment, too. And it was totally off the cuff. I don't remember who was questioning him. And it was so ridiculous, Connor. There was a guy who had a Louisiana accent, I guess, who had been maybe law enforcement in Louisiana, but then risen higher in L.A.,
okay.
That's what I could interpret, but definitely had a deep Louisiana accent. Who had some obsession with what Michael Cohen had done with the boxes that he had gotten back from the evidence raid. Like, where are the boxes, Mr. Cohen? You know? He was ridiculous. For like 5 minutes, where are the boxes? They were asking him, you know, like I mentioned before, two congresspeople asked him if he planned on writing a book. Or had been approached by movie studios, you know, like, which I find is like the end all irony, given they're supposed to be like the party of entrepreneurship.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, how dare you bring profit into this equation?
Right. I mean, I don't really know if I'd call that hypocrisy, but it was definitely ironic.
Yeah.
And generally, that's what they did. There was a moment where, have you heard of the Mark Meadows moment?
No.
I'm loath to just recap the news, but this one was pretty big. He brought out a woman who had, I guess, been an events coordinator for the Trump Organization, and now was somebody kind of important in HUD, had like a two-state region to oversee. The black lady, youngish, I guess, she started asking Michael Cohen, how could Trump be racist if this black lady works for him?
Oh, my God.
And she was standing there, dude. It made me remember why they're the party of personal property. And I don't mean that in a slavish way. I mean that in a employees have no value way. Like, that's been the aggression of that. You know what I'm saying? Of that concept.
So there could be no there's no place in that equation for she's there because of merit.
Right, right. Hey, okay. We found a black lady that works for Trump.
Right. Okay.
And it could have been any group, or like if he had said that he was anti-homosexual, they would have found a gay person, you know, like the party of personal property rights, which they are. They don't really place a lot of value on people.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
It's a recurring.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that's a recurring thing with the lack of value in people. It comes out in so many ways.
It does. It does. I've always found it ironic that they were the party that first coined the term identity politics. I think it might have even been Gingrich that coined that term. But if either party is bent on identity politics, it's the one that puts mother trucker stickers or Black Trucks Matter stickers on their freaking pickup trucks and shit. You know what I mean?
Oh, Jesus.
Like, if there's any identity politics, if nothing else, don't be casting stones. So,
yeah.
So they bombed it, man. I mean, they tried to hit Cohen on his credibility and it didn't work out, you know?
Yeah.
And the Dems came at it, I would say, generally in a fact-finding fashion.
Mm-hmm.
There were some powerful moments. There was you could tell that what we had talked about just a second ago with how that is kind of planned out. You could tell how that it built to a crescendo.
Okay.
I also want what another thing that struck me actually was there were a lot of freshmen on that panel, and there were a lot of freshmen on that panel that people have been talking about.
That's exciting.
Well, it is exciting, and it's politically smart for a number of reasons.
Okay.
The first reason I want to say is that's Nancy Pelosi leadership council stuff. Like, that's because of Pelosi that people get their leadership positions. That's how it works. And, I mean, she may not say this person gets it, but she gets the biggest vote on who goes onto these committees.
Okay.
You know, and some people end up stuck on the under committee of blah, 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 right?
Okay, yeah.
Because, you know, they're not reliable vote or something. Or they're, and honestly speaking, a high profile in the media gets a political party, you know, free media.
Yeah.
So if you put your famous people on the first big panel to look into, this was the first big investigative panel into Donald J. Trump as president. That's why I wanted to talk about it today, because it's the history. And it really is. Think about it. The other ones, those Republican ones, they were garbage. They were jokes. They weren't even investigative panels when you think about it. Have Devin Nunes running back and forth telling them what they're learning when they're lying to the panel anyway, and nobody even really cares because they're not going to subpoena them or put anybody under oath. Those weren't investigations. They were shams.
Show trials.
And everybody know. Yeah, yeah. And they weren't even. Most of them behind closed doors.
Yeah.
And two of Michael Cohen's hearings of the three this week, he did one today to the House Intelligence Committee, and it was behind closed doors, but that had to do with investigations that were not ready to be released to the public.
Uh-huh.
So yesterday was the first real, true, big start of investigations into Donald J. Trump as a president.
That's cool. That's got me fired up in a way that I wasn't yesterday. That's good. Okay.
I'm thrilled to be an American today because November worked. Do you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. You voted for something and the thing is coming about to some degree.
Right. Right, right. Like my countrymen came through. So I don't mean thrilled to be an American, you know what I mean? But like, I'm thrilled that the majority of the people that voted in November's election voted for to happen is starting to happen.
Yeah.
That keeps faith in the system. Like, I think about it all the time, especially when people, you know, it's going to fall apart and all this. Yeah, really? I mean, like, here we are. And it took a minute. It took a month. What took what? They stepped into their seats in January, right? Mm-hmm. There was a government shutdown for a month, which cuts out a lot of fundings that they have to be able to organize these things, because the administration takes care of a lot of buildings and stuff like that. It mucks up the system. But here we are a month later, and the right-hand man of the President of the United States for, 12 years, just sat in front of the House Oversight Committee. That's a huge freaking deal, liar or not.
Yeah.
So what they did was they picked one member asked about the taxes. Well, he's also a member who sits on the tax committee, the finance committee. So he has responsibility over taxes and is able to go to the IRS and say, we need this person's taxes. This is my jurisdiction. You're going to have to give it to me. And he asked Cohen about the taxes. And Cohen, of course, said, no, I don't really think he was ever under audit. You know, I mean, it wasn't those words exactly, but that's what it ended up being. They talked about asset inflation and how the president has been doing that over and over and over again. Now, I've seen on television a lot of people make the distinction between what he did before he was president and what he did since he was president, and what the Trump organization has done since he was president. But it's key to remember that Donald J. Trump didn't really separate himself from his business when he took office.
No, absolutely.
So if the Trump organization is engaging in the same tax fraud and insurance fraud and charitable foundation fraud, I think that's probably tax fraud, then he would be committing those crimes as well. That's his organization. He didn't reduce his stake in it. He just said, I'm going to step away. That's what he said.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything. And clearly he didn't if the checks that Michael Cohen had provided, one signed by Donald Trump, one signed by Donald Trump Jr., and one signed by their Trump organization accountant who worked for Dad Trump, that means that, yeah, he didn't step away. He signed the checks, legally speaking. So there was another thing I wanted to point out earlier about House committee hearings and Senate committee hearings too, but it's more so in the House, and it was a couple of things, and they're fun little House idiosyncrasies.
Idiosyncrasies.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Off the tongue.
Yeah.
House rules. The House is a rowdy place. I don't know if you've ever seen one of the things I love about the movie Lincoln, Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln, is it shows the House back then. And the House, I mean, like, there are, you know, people have shot each other coming out of the House, and it's a rowdy place. It's the people's house. So it has some quirky rules, and it's gotten some things, you know, like if something is said in a committee hearing and one of the members speaks up and says, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have that, you know, put into the record. Like, they'll all vote so that they can get a vote of everyone putting it into the record. Like a receipt, you know, hey, you did or didn't vote for this. This is a little political receipt, right? But the reason they do that is because way back in the day when the House was a rowdy place and everybody literally was screaming at each other all the time.
Yeah.
There was a recorder, and he only recorded what he could hear. He wrote down what he could hear. So if you heard something, you'd call it out and say, I want to vote that into the record.
That's really interesting.
That's like the basis of that.
Wow, that is really interesting. Because I had never wondered. But if I was smarter and more inquisitive, I would have wondered why that was a practice. Okay,
that's really interesting. There's somebody recording it literally on videotape. Why, right?
Yeah.
So the other one I wanted to point out was in the hearing yesterday, anyone that had watched it as I did would notice that a lot of times the ranking member for the Republicans was Jim Jordan. And how sick is that? Anyway, oftentimes you'll hear members at the end of they get allotted amount of time. And if they don't take it all, they'll say, I yield my time to the chair or the ranking member.
Uh-huh.
That stuff's really detailed and planned too. Like if the ranking member or usually the Democrats don't do it quite as much as the Republicans do. I can think of a host of reasons why that might be true, but it'd all be conjecture. But what'll happen is like Jim Jordan will get the rest of that time.
Okay.
So why would you hear from Jim Jordan 3, 4, or 5 times in the course of 4 to 5 hours when all the other people only got one shot? Was because he asked for that time from them. I want 2 minutes of your time.
Okay.
I guess probably to try to continue to set the narrative. That's the politics of it. You with me?
I am.
Okay. That's just day-to-day politics stuff, too. That's just like a rules manipulation for I can only assume that before the advent of mass media, it wasn't quite so much for messaging.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, one has to wonder. So choreographed.
Well, yeah, exactly. I actually would wonder if it was even done as much before mass media. But it's done now, and it's clearly the reason for it, because Jim Jordan took some time in and, pointed out something stupid, because he does stupid things.
Yeah, with his big, stupid face.
He's a big, stupid face. That's a fact. That is a fact.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to just talk just a little bit more about where I think the Dems politically have gone with it rather than like the details of the hearing itself.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be peppered in with some of the details, of course, to explain it. But the question now is for the Dems, do they want to impeach or do they not want to impeach?
It's so stark to hear that out loud.
Well, why is that stark?
But I'll tell you why. Because for so long, it's almost been the word that everyone is afraid to say. It's like you don't want to jinx it.
Do you know why? When Newt Gingrich and his Republicans famously tried to impeach Bill Clinton, and then it didn't get through the Senate trial to take him out of office, they paid a price at the ballot box the next election.
Really?
Oftentimes you'll hear the media. Oh yeah, absolutely. And oftentimes you'll hear the media refer to it, and I mean oftentimes. They all do. Gingrich, it didn't work out. You know, Gingrich, they tried that with Bill Clinton, and which is one of the most irresponsible, obviously false narratives I've heard in a long time. It's nothing like Bill Clinton's impeachment at all.
Yeah, it's pretty different.
It is different. Bill Clinton had a 63% approval rating at the time that he was impeached in the House.
Wow. That's such a crazy number. It's such a crazy difference in numbers.
Yeah, it's a. You know what his approval rating was after the Senate trial?
What was that?
73%.
That's so crazy compared to what's happening now. Like,
yeah.
That's okay. That's really interesting, actually.
So when the media says that the Democrats shouldn't impeach because, you know, they're going to end up like Gingrich, or they shouldn't lurch too far to the left because they're going to end up like Gingrich, it's a false equivalence.
Uh-huh.
This is nothing like when Bill Clinton was impeached. It's nothing like it. Donald J. Trump has never gone above 50% in approval rating.
Wow.
Currently 54, depending on the poll, around 54 to 55% of Americans say they will definitely not vote for Donald Trump again. Does that sound like a guy who's safe from impeachment?
To be honest, this part always confuses me because is it still the case that the Senate can block impeachment?
The House has impeachment hearings. Mm-hmm. If the impeachment hearings are good to go, you know, like the House votes to impeach the president.
Yes.
Then it goes to the Senate for a trial.
Okay.
And the Senate has a trial, which is then they vote. And if they vote to impeach the president, then the president is impeached. But it's 2/3 the whole way.
So an argument that I've heard, and I believe I've even you and I have discussed it, and you've mentioned this, is that impeachment proceedings are useful anyway because of all the discovery that goes on during that.
Absolutely. That's the point of the impeachment proceedings, is the discovery of, well, okay, ideally you would have wanted to have discovered these things first. Like, as we talked about how like a House hearing is planned, I mean, they wanted the evidence beforehand. One of the neat tricks that was pulled was yesterday was that Cohen didn't release any of the material to them until last night, and it, you know, got released to the news at the same time.
Okay.
So it put the Republican House members back on their heels.
Of course.
Yeah. Like, if he'd released those checks and whatever else, he entered some other stuff into evidence too. If he'd released those checks, they would have had a whole night to sit up thinking about what they were going to say, and you know.
Yeah, to get whatever 60 former classmates to say that Brett Kavanaugh was a great guy.
Exactly. Now, I can't stress enough how absolutely dysfunctional that is for a party to do. That's an abdication of constitutional duties. Then again, those who do not, you know, those who hate government shouldn't govern.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So we'll go back to the Dems. So they, in my opinion, an impeachment move is not the same as it was during the Clinton years. I think that it's a much more viable strategy to go through now, especially more since yesterday. There were revelations that people had suspicions about, but it never really heard spoken out loud.
Okay.
And because of yesterday's hearings, which were really, I mean, the House Oversight Committee has a stunning, stunning array of jurisdiction over the administration. That's their sole job. So, I mean, you know, there are House committees on science that, you know, gather scientists for studies, and there are House committees on water management, and yeah, all that stuff goes into the government coffer for, you know, it's entered into the, you know, to the record, right?
Uh-huh.
And sent to the appropriate agencies and stuff. But generally speaking, oversight happens in a few different agencies, and House oversight is the largest of them by far. To have Elijah Cummings at the top of it is a real honor for him. For any politician, actually, because it's a very, very, very powerful position.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's the funny thing, man. You know, I always think about it. If you watch the political process from the outside, people always say to me, the Senate needs to go, you know, and I just, it doesn't, because it makes sense. Well, you have to look at it like on these different macro levels in different situations to see why it makes sense. Like, you can't just explain it all at once.
I feel like at some point we should do a primer on that, because I don't understand it enough to talk about it. I'd love to.
Well, that's actually one of the reasons I picked up that I put it on my homepage of my phone, the House floor rules. I wanted to do one on the House and one on the Senate, you know, so we could get a good understanding of.
Yeah, I would really like that, actually.
But today was a big day, so and I didn't want to miss the opportunity to talk about it while it was fresh.
Yeah.
So is it cool? I mean, can we go back to that? Is that cool?
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So those are my thoughts on the impeachment. And the reason I think that it's even a better case that they can do it is because they brought out the threads of evidence that they're going to need to prove to the American people that the president's been doing illegal stuff. Because it's, in my opinion, what they're going to have to prove, that the guy's been breaking the law, that cheating on his wives and talking smack, punching down, and just the general, trollishness of that man is pretty much baked into the cake by now.
Yeah. They're never going to get him on being shitty.
No, I mean, he's openly shitty and doesn't care if you think he's shitty. So, no, you're not going to get people on that like being shitty. You're going to have to work, you know, with legalities.
Yeah.
Another thing that Cohen did yesterday that helps the impeachment process is he named a lot of names. Like, when I say that Don Jr. was on the check, that boy's going to have his butt in that seat real soon.
Oh, that's when I'll watch.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they're going to do it in public. They'll say, fine, we won't talk about Russia. We'll talk to you about everything else.
Yeah.
So, and here's the thing. Anything that him and his father talked about before Trump became the president does not fall under executive privilege.
Oh, okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Before he was sworn in does not count as executive privilege, which means the transition doesn't count as executive privilege.
And that was a wild west of a time.
The inauguration happened during the transition, didn't it?
Yeah, I believe
all
it did.
All the planning money and all that. Right?
Yeah.
Chris Christie got fired during that inauguration. I wonder why that really happened. Ivanka and Jared, they're going to have their fancy little butts up there since they found out what the Trump organization's been doing.
That's another one to look forward to.
Jay Sekulow, Michael Cohen said yesterday, this blew my freaking mind. I like, it was really like a huge, like a Super Bowl touchdown kind of moment as far as excitement goes.
Uh-huh.
He said that Jay Sekulow and Abby Lowe, who is the Kushner's attorney, changed his initial statement to be the lie that he gave to Congress.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
So he had a statement that was being released. They edited it before it was released.
He had a statement that he was going to give to Congress when he testified back when the Republicans were controlling it, right? Or to the Senate, to the House committee. Excuse me. He had a statement that he was going to release to Congress, and it went through Jay Sekulow and Abby Lowe first, and they changed it, and that is the statement that he is in trouble. That is the lie to Congress. So what they're going to want to know is, then he said he would gladly give them his original statement. So what they're going to want to know is, did he write the lie, or was the lie what they wrote into it?
That's delicious. And
if so, why?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that is a tasty beverage. Like, that is, yeah.
And these are the big fish, politically speaking. Jay Sekulow is a catch. Let me tell you, that dude has been a shady religious liberty lawyer for a long, long time. He is a catch. If they can catch him doing something like that, that guy not working in the court system anymore would be a boon to this nation.
Wow.
And that's the truth. He is a remember we talked about the Bush was packing the court system or packing the Department of Justice.
Uh-huh.
He's one of those kinds of guys, like a real conservative, over the top shark kind of lawyer, likes to play the system fast and loose, you know.
This is another example of where it's really useful for an outsider to hear this, because to me, Jay Sekulow has been, he's like that clown who goes on and just says unbelievable lies about how Trump hasn't done anything wrong. So I wasn't aware of him as, you know, this more important figure in the background.
I'm not sure which evangelical or maybe think tank group he came from before Trump, but he did do a lot. He's mostly made his career on constitutional religious liberty cases. Probably, I mean, given the nature of politics, I would say it was a connection from maybe one of those evangelical leaders that stood in his office right after he got elected and laid their hands on him and were all creepy. So definitely he'll be sitting in that chair. Abby Lowe will be sitting in that chair. The mustache guy Ty Cobb, he'll be sitting in that chair.
Yeah.
And who does that anyway? All those people will have to testify. They can't say no, right? And if they do, I mean, that's contempt of Congress. They got cops for that, man. They do. They just never have to use them because people go. Well, as we've said here before, there's a reason they're Article 1 of the Constitution. Not that they have any inherently more power than anyone else, but there is a reason that the Congress is Article 1 of the House of the Constitution. I mean, it's the people's representative. It should be the first listed. It should be, you know, kind of implied that, yeah, that's where the buck stops is with Congress. We place far too much importance on our presidents anyway.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that becomes a side effect of this debacle, is a bit of a reining in of the executive. It happened after Nixon, and I have a feeling that the time might be right for it to happen again. Maybe.
Okay.
We haven't really talked about it ever, but there's been a huge, besides just the unitary executive theory, just the massing of power that's gone into the executive branch since probably the 70s, I guess. That has amassed since the 70s when the checks were put onto it. It's pretty staggering. There's way, way too much power in that branch of our government right now. A little kingly. Okay, so the reason I mention all these things about the impeachment is because that is definitely what they can do. Like you said, the impeachment sometimes is the point, the process is the point.
Uh-huh.
That's the process that started yesterday, if that's the route they're going to go. Now, I'm not saying that they're not going to continue to investigate these people, because damn skippy they are. They're going to investigate as many people as they possibly can. We're going to see investigations from people. People are going to make news we've never heard of. That's generally how this goes. They'll find somebody that somebody will be testifying about maybe the Department of Energy and some chicanery went on or something, and they'll have to say something and it'll blow something wide open.
Right.
And that's just more narrative for impeachment that just adds to the pile of corruption.
Uh-huh.
And makes the it turns the public tide against the president. It's not the impeachable offense, but it's the process of impeachment, is part of the process of impeachment to turn the public tide against the president, because it is a political process and not a legal process.
And we spoke before about magic numbers in approval ratings.
Right. Exactly. There really, there's not too much of a dip. If they can get about 10%, I mean, it shouldn't be too hard in the House, I think. The Senate, I'd want to talk about that some other time. We're just talking about the House right now.
Yeah.
Okay. The other choice they have, sans impeachment, is to do these investigations, keep that narrative corruption going, hammer him as much as they can without causing impeachment per se, and then run on it in 2020.
Right.
Personally, I feel that's a – I'd be really disappointed in the Democratic Party if they did that.
Yeah. I mean, as an outsider, I would be disappointed. I want to go to the fireworks factory now. We've been waiting a long time.
I feel like it would be more party before country, quite frankly.
Right.
This guy's clearly a danger to the Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, he just is. I mean, I don't like Mike Pence, and he's a creepy dude, and just don't really think he could win an election on his own nationally, quite frankly. But he's not a madman. I mean, as far as like, well, he is a bit of a madman, but I mean, he's not a madman. It's like he thinks things through, at least. Does that make sense?
I mean,
he would be more prone to listen to the national security state as well.
He has enough ability to reason to be the Schlieben that he is.
I'm glad you said that word. You know what? I didn't put anything on what I just said. He is kind of a madman, and he's creepy and weird. But generally speaking, where I'm at with Trump is that I'm worried about like calamity. You know, I'm worried about national security ramifications that can't be fixed for 20, 25 years. I don't see that in a Mike Pence.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like my fear with Pence is more the creep. It's more the crawl of what he'll bring in and his presumably very short time in power, what kind of stuff he'll try and push through. But now, I mean, at least the House is a stopgap against that.
Yeah. I'm not worried about that, really. That we, I mean, the November, baby, you know?
Yeah, that's comforting. That is comforting.
So if Trump goes, I mean, it don't matter. Mike Pence can be creepy all he wants. As long as he ain't going to blow up the world, I'm good with it. You know? He ain't going to win. He's a block of wood.
Yeah, he's supremely creepy.
He really is a creepy guy.
You know, okay, we're...
What now? What?
No, I was going to say, you know we're near the end of the episode when we start giving you good news.
That's true. And it is good news because it's November, you know? Yeah. Are we out of place? Are we there?
Well, no, we can still go on. I just mean we've sort of come we're coming out of the tunnel now.
Oh no, we're not.
We're going back in the tunnel?
We're going back in the tunnel.
Oh, okay.
Well, something. I'm sorry.
It's okay. All right, go on.
There was something that really stood out to me. About the hearing when they were talking about the asset inflation What do you, are you, do you know, I mean, it's pretty, do you know what it is?
Asset inflation is where you make it sound like you don't need a loan so that you can get a loan.
You
make it seem like you have a lot of stuff that maybe you don't have, but on paper you sort of seem like you do.
Or that your stuff is worth more than it really is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's fraud. It's fraud. It's absolutely fraud. There was another thing that Cohen talked about, that the Dems brought out in the questioning. Maybe it's the Trump minute. I don't know. But okay, so you know this painting that the Seth – no, that's not right. The Washington Post reporter that did all the looking into Trump's foundation during the campaign. What was his name? Do you remember?
No.
Anyway, they found out that there was a – he found out – it was great reporting. They found out that there was a painting that was purchased for, I think, about $50,000. A large one, like a six-footer of Donald Trump. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, by the Trump – organization, or by the Trump Foundation, rather, sorry.
Using the worst.
Donated money, it seems. It's worse. It's worse. Okay.
It's worse.
Okay, so we are back in the tunnel. All right, go.
Yeah. What they did was they paid a straw man to buy it at the highest price possible so that Trump could have the ego that he could show everybody at that auction that his painting sold for the most.
Oh, no.
Then paid the guy back. Out of the Trump org, out of the Trump Foundation.
I feel sick.
I know, right? How petty can you be?
That's so horrible. It is funny, but it's so horrible.
What a small, small, sad man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I mention these things is because I got to thinking about it. Okay, so let's say, let's say that the $130,000 that Michael Cohen got as reimbursement for the Stormy Daniels payment, let's just say for instance that it came from the Trump Foundation. I'm not implying that it did, but I'm using that as an own example of the Trump organization taking shady methods to pay their debts.
Uh-huh.
Okay, to avoid taxes or discovery.
Yeah.
So let's just say that over the taxes on that sort of payment, because really what happened was since Michael Cohen, actually it was a tax fraud because I'm not a lawyer, I shouldn't say that, but it would seem to me like we talked about earlier that since Michael Cohen took out a home loan to pay for it, to pay her, and then that's not what the purpose of the loan was, and then it was paid back from the Trump organization. They build it as legal services. That would feel to me like a whole chain of fraud, right?
Yes, absolutely.
If it came out of the Trump Foundation, then they would be taking it out of tax-free money. You with me?
Yeah.
So if you use the example of the painting, that would be $50,000 if they pulled out tax-free. Now, if they're doing this kind of thing all the time, like how many times has Michael Cohen been paid $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 from the Trump Foundation for something they don't want discovery of?
Yeah.
Well, if there's like, let's say for instance, there's maybe a 10% tax on the 30% or $30,000. If they were billing Michael Cohen and it was an income, let's say there was a 10% tax, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Now, I don't know enough about tax law who to know who would be responsible for that. I would assume maybe Michael Cohen, mm-hmm. but what we're talking about here is millionaires. Okay.
Yeah.
And what my point is here is that we're relating this back to the income inequality built in the system.
Yeah.
So if you have a bunch of millionaires who are doing this and they're cutting $30,000 checks, $40,000 checks, how many ever times a year? Michael Cohen got 11 checks that year.
Wow.
And that's just one guy for just one transaction. So you could figure that in a business that does the kind of monetary business that the Trump organization did. They probably did that hundreds of times a year. Would you call that a fair assumption?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you have an entire culture of these billionaires that are doing these kinds of things, and they are, not all of them, of course, but there's what, 20,000 billionaires in America, maybe a little more. I don't know what the exact number is. I think I remember reading it somewhere, but let's just say there are 20,000 billionaires in America. If 50% of them are doing that, there's some crazy numbers behind that.
Yeah.
like, if just taking the $30,000, 11 checks for $30,000, and you take $10,000 out of each of those checks that wasn't paid into the federal tax system, just the federal tax system. We haven't gotten into the state tax system. So just the federal tax system, $10,000 per check. Well, that's $11,000 on just those transactions that were not paid in taxes. If that happens twice, if that happens three times, maybe four times, you're getting into the salary of an American.
Yeah.
Right?
And then when you extrapolate.
Yeah.
It's ugly.
You're talking millions of people covering the taxes for these rich people who are purposely skirting the system to not pay those taxes.
Yeah.
That is, well, that ain't right, brother. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's not right.
And now here, check it out. Are you ready? Because light at the end of the tunnel, baby.
Okay, let's go.
That's what's going to be in the House. If they start asking the Trump Organization accountant to sit in the seat, now he's got some immunity from Mueller to talk about certain things, but if they're able to get him to sit in front of the House, or Don Jr., or I don't even know if Eric does anything, or Jared, he has, you know, ties to the organization, Ivanka, and they get them to start admitting to this stuff, then you have these brand new people who, November baby, are sitting on these committees that Pelosi put on there to call out these inequalities in the system. In the context of impeaching a president, what better platform can you ask for?
Guaranteed viewership.
Exactly.
People are guaranteed to watch and guaranteed to give a shit.
That's right. I saw just this morning, I came back. I came out this morning and sent you a message and did my morning readings, my political stuff, and then went back inside and hit play on the old thing because I like to pause what's on when I walk away. And a reporter was somewhere in Ohio or Pennsylvania talking to two guys, and both of them were glued to what happened yesterday. He gave two opposing viewpoints, of course, but both of them were well-versed in what happened yesterday.
Right.
Which is really the point, that people be well-versed.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's hopeful that Michael Cohen went there and said those things. And it's hopeful that the House is going to sit Don Jr.'s butt down and say, that's insurance fraud. Tell me how you did that.
Wow.
Because people are going to see it. And OAC is going to say, is this a common practice in the industry that you're in? Or things like that. Because she has a political narrative she wants to put out too. Not picking on her by saying that. I'm saying that every politician that came in there that got elected in 2020, they have a political narrative that they're there for too.
Of course. Yeah.
And if they can get an opportunity to squeeze that narrative into something as large as a presidential corruption hearing, at the very least, well, heck yeah, they will. Especially if it's contextual.
Yeah.
And it's like when Michael Cohen says something like, hey, I know what you guys are doing because I was sitting right there. Look where it got me. There are moments that stand out in those hearings. Because they're a little bit of theater.
Yeah.
And it should be that way.
And what an audience.
Right. Kind of given the audacity of the Orange Menace, I hate saying things like this because it feels so pretentious and nationalistic, but I feel like maybe it's a world audience sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's one of those things. I don't want to sound like cranky about it, but unfortunately, I don't really want to know about American politics. I do, but I want the luxury of not having to know about American politics, and I don't feel I have that luxury at the moment.
You know, you just said to me, don't you?
Enlighten me.
You want things to go back to the way they were 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, to some degree, I want things to go back to the way they were. I enjoy being better informed in a way. I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I think it's good that I'm better informed. But I do want to go back to be able to going to sleep without sort of checking in and wondering if your country, as much as I love your country, will do something that will hurt me while I'm asleep.
I get that. That's actually one of the things I noticed about this whole shit show was that I felt like, I mean, I always knew that there was an impact of American actions around the world, but it became more clear to me. It just became more clear to me.
Yeah.
It is draining to know this stuff, though, but it's I really do believe that if the system is holding, and it's holding true. Yesterday was a big example of the system holding. The vote happened, and yesterday happened, and it's going to go forward. I read today that they're already going to call Ivanka and Donnie Jr. in front of the House Oversight Committee. I mean, it's working.
That is huge.
Yeah, it's a really big deal. It's a really big deal. Yeah. I think a lot of the stress of it is higher now because of the way Trump acts. The reason it was easier not to pay attention before, even when like a guy like George W. Bush was in, I mean, eventually every once in a while you'd get his goofy I'm the decider things. But generally speaking, you knew, you know, there was a steadfast. The thing people like about America more than anything else, in my opinion, in the world, as far as like world politicians and systems of government, is that generally speaking, we're pretty reliable in that we don't change foreign policy at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And you know, like we talked about in the last episode, there's a system for those things. And yeah. Trump's upset that he's upset that system in a big, big way. And we're no longer a reliable partner is something I heard said a while ago. And it's very true in that we're not as I don't want to say predictable because that's not really the right word. Continuous in our policy as we used to be.
Yeah.
Good and bad policies.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I have talked about that a little bit because I live here in the UK. So a lot of the news that just sort of pops up on my, you know, on my feed, I guess, is European news. And you just hear that over and over and over again, different European leaders saying, well, we need to figure this out because you can't trust America now.
Exactly. You can't. We were at least trustable. If it was a good policy or a bad policy, you knew that if a next president came in, if that policy were to be something that would be changed, it would happen over time with negotiations and a real effort to intermingle as reliable partners.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And that's not really what's happened since Trump. That makes sense, though. I mean, I am whatever the hell he said at that convention. Only I can fix it. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's what he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, an idiot. I don't know. That's the part that I had to learn over the years was the trusting of the system. When you see the Republicans come to power, the Democrats come to power, and the Republicans come to power, they shifted so much. You learn that you have to trust the system to do its job. I think where we're at that makes it a little more on the edge, I guess, for me, is that my system requires two functioning parties, and we don't have that right now.
Right.
And that is worrisome, although sometimes I think about that, like when I hear a pundit talk about how the Dems shouldn't go too far left when they talk in the same breath about, you know, not impeaching. And it comes from people on the left and the right, but mostly the right. I think maybe that's probably politically self-serving, that message. But yeah. I think that if the party on the right isn't functioning, it would be the time to strike with your boldest policy ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just point out over and over how corrupt they are, which is kind of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see, I guess. When we talk about this, I guess we'll probably talk about the Senate before we talk about the House, because the Senate is most pertinent to now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of Republicans up for re-election in 2020. Anyway, I guess I'm done with talking about yesterday. I don't think I have anything else about it.
I mean, this has been good because it has – well, A, thank you very much for giving me a primer on something I kind of missed. But also, it's been good because it's sort of shaken me out of that funk of feeling like it was just one liar telling tales on another liar when it's actually something much bigger than that. And that's good.
Far bigger. It was probably the biggest piece of history I've seen since maybe Colin Powell saying finding enriched uranium and at the UN. Iraq's been looking for enriched uranium. Maybe the biggest piece of history I've seen since that. I might not. It was yesterday was a huge, 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 huge deal. Huge deal. I drank way too much coffee.
Well, folks, for one thing, actually, I'm going to be editing this tomorrow, so you'll be getting this tomorrow night, and since it's difficult to convey what that means in terms of the future, by the time you hear this, yesterday will have been the day before yesterday.
Oh yeah, we should have said that.
Yeah, it's only occurring to me now. We are talking about this on Thursday the 28th of February my time. The night of Thursday the 28th of February. But yeah, you'll get this another day after that. But thank you for sort of making me feel like that was worth caring about when I'd been stung by the apathy dart a little bit, you know?
It's so easy. I think I know that actually is part of Republican political strategy is to
make
apathetic. And I hate seeing that happen to people, which is why I always try to think of like the process and the fact that November did work.
Yeah.
No matter how many times Republicans say it's a shit show or it's going to all fall apart, or November worked and it'll continue to work.
All right. That's a good message to end on.
For sure. Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.